Someone occasionally does a sermon or writes an article entitled, "What Would Jesus Do If He Were Living Today?" It's harmless guesswork for the most part, but there's one thing we can be reasonably sure about. If he were to teach now, as he taught in his own lifetime, he would almost certainly refer often to movies, which create and reflect the values we believe in. Most of his own teaching was in the form of little short stories he made up. We call them parables. It's hard to imagine that he would not be fascinated by the incredible power of movies for good or evil. Which is all by way of explaining why I start with one this morning. I saw a rather curious movie last week called Forrest Gump and left the theater with contradictory feelings. It was an odd mix of the realistic and the romantic, of the wonderful and tender, intertwined with the silly and unrealistic. Played with remarkable talent by Tom Hanks, it's a takeoff on the old idea of the holy idiot, the divine fool, the child man who puts the rest of us to shame by his simple virtues and his steadfast love. It exalts all sorts of responses to life, which I believe in, and it was easy for me to get caught up in the spell and want to believe every bit of it. But Hollywood seldom can resist overkill. It's not enough to create a charming divine fool who makes us all yearn for a more innocent world. The film goes on to dump one sack of sugar after another into our laps. One is that we can do anything if we only want to enough, which may be an incentive to try harder, but is ultimately a lie and often cruel. Part of growing up is the discovery that we can't do everything we'd like, that we have certain genetic or environmental limits, that luck sometimes fails us, that the world may simply refuse to cooperate. And the movie promotes the cliche that goodness will inevitably lead to all sorts of marvelous triumphs, a notion so foreign to the gospel that I have no choice but to reject it. Hollywood knows, of course, that we'd like to believe that being good guarantees success. So once it gets us to identify with this lovable child man, it knows we will sit back and enjoy the miracles. A boy, crippled at birth, who becomes the world's fastest human. It isn't simply that he learns to walk. He becomes the fastest human being on earth. A misfit who, when a coach sees him run, is lured to college despite an IQ that dips out of sight and becomes not just a good football player, but an All-American. In a war he can't comprehend, he becomes a hero. Wins not just a Purple Heart or a bronze medal, but the Congressional Medal of Honor itself. By this time, when he shows some skill at ping pong, we can predict what will happen. He becomes the world's champion. And finally, And we knew this a mile in advance. He reaches the ultimate pinnacle of American success and becomes the millionaire owner of a fleet of shrimp boats. It's a movie one probably shouldn't think about much once it's over. It seems a shame to be critical when it's been so much fun, thrilling to the heroism and weeping at all the poignant moments. But the truth is, we get from the film a false image of human life. It panders to that incurable romanticism which in some ways keeps us lovable and in other ways keeps us from growing up into a world of reality. Forrest Gump, for example, never actually sins, to use a church word. He may be afraid at times, naive, even angry once or twice when the bad guys upset him, but what he finally becomes is a saint, an American Christ figure who combines the Trinity of our dreams. Hall of Fame athlete, war hero, and business tycoon. Now, if any of this makes you think of an upcoming trial, that may be all right. O.J. may or may not be guilty, but what is fascinating is the passion with which so many people insist he couldn't be guilty. Not this great athlete, not this handsome movie star, not this wealthy TV celebrity, one of us maybe, but not the famous fantasy figure we have enthroned as our alter ego. Now I'm about to reach the topic. This is all very foreign to the scripture handed down to us by Jewish and Christian writers who talk much more realistically about what human life is like. The prophet Isaiah, for example, who says without a hint of apology that every one of us has gone astray. Not just the rapists and robbers, the muggers and gang members, but all of us have a dark corner somewhere. Now, you may expect the Old Testament to be gloomy in places, but listen to this echo by Paul in the New. There is no distinction, he says, to be made anywhere. Everyone has sinned. Everyone falls short of the beauty of God's plan. Now, this is an honest look at life, a realistic look, and this would be a less harshly judgmental world if all of us could admit to a dark side, a failing, a weakness. For one thing, it would not surprise us so terribly when an idol crumbles. And perhaps it would keep us from creating so many idols in the first place. It's healthy and useful to admire someone. It's risky to create idols who, in our blind romanticism, we are positive can do no wrong. But we have all missed the mark, Paul says. We have all fallen short of the beauty of God's plan. Not the kind of thing, I suppose, we're especially eager to hear on a warm summer morning. So the gospel according to Mary Poppins is more appealing. If you do have to take a little medicine, it won't be bad. Just a spoonful of sugar, Julie Andrews sang in that sweet, sweet, sweet voice. Just a spoonful of sugar to make the medicine go down. I thought about asking our distinguished soloist George Gibson to sing that for me. But I didn't think about it very long. You remember the old movie, surely, some of you, lighthearted, happy, everything turning out perfectly at the last. In fact, the song also promises that every task you undertake becomes a piece of cake. And under the spell, we may believe it, but it's another sweet little falsehood. Well, I'm afraid I'm hopeless this morning. First, I walk heavily on a popular current movie, and then I lay this burden on a simple nursery tune. But in a way, the whole mysterious dichotomy of good and evil is in both of them. Remember, after all, that the child in the song is having to take medicine somewhere, hidden mostly. There's a germ, an illness. And even in Forrest Gump, romantic as it is, a little girl's abuse by an evil father ruins her life. When she goes back as a grown woman to the place where she lived out that horror as a child, she breaks down in hysterical tears of rage and starts throwing rocks at the house. For me, it was the most powerful moment in the film, an admission that things are not perfect, that some evils do irreparable damage and ruin lives. Gump, the tender, holy fool, watches her throw the rocks, this woman he loves with an invincible love, and as the moment fades from the screen, he speaks the best line in the picture. Sometimes there are just not enough rocks. Now that sudden moment of painful truth appealed to me. I think we make ourselves and our children vulnerable unless we let them know that life is not always fair. If you are a parent, you have to find ways to do that, to prepare your child for reality in such a way that there will be wisdom, finally, without crippling cynicism. A time comes even when you let the children know you have found some ambiguities and pretenses in your own life, and that they should not be crushed to discover those possibilities in theirs. Let them know that you have doubts at times, that it can be hard to be truthful, even about some of our simplest moods, that human beings are a tangle of mixed motives and self-deceivings. Do that, because they will find it out anyway, inevitably. And it will have been to your everlasting credit if you taught them first, when the hard lesson could be seasoned with love. I happened to see some children learning that lesson one day. I walked out the door of an elementary school just as one sixth grader was wailing the daylights out of another one. I said something brilliant like, "Hey, we don't need this." And the boy who was getting the worst of it seized the chance to run off and leave me with his enemy. That one was a good-looking boy, but I was shocked by the incredible fury in his face, and even more shocked when I learned how little it had taken to provoke him into hysterical rage. But I understood when I talked to his teacher, who's sitting in the room this morning, who knew something of the darkness which had already touched that child's life. Two different kinds of tranquilizers each day, she told me. That's what it took to keep him calm, and since it was the noon hour, he was just about ready to take number two. And why did he need them? Well, his mother, when he was a little boy, had divorced and remarried, and the new husband had promptly started to beat and abuse this child. Who knows why? Maybe he saw his wife's former husband in the boy's face, or maybe he just needed someone helpless on whom to take out his own frustrations. In any event, the wife came home from work one day to discover this little boy so badly beaten that she decided to get rid of husband number two as well. But by that time, the scars were deep, and there was a sickness in that child beyond the power of a spoonful of sugar to cure. One day he had an accident on his bicycle and hurt himself. He picked up a rock and began to beat the bicycle, and suddenly he was out of control and could not stop. His frenzy grew until an ambulance was called and came, and the attendants put him in a straitjacket and took him to a hospital. The mother tried several counselors, but none had much luck until she found one finally to whom her son related, and he began to do better. But long before he was well, that particular Wichita psychologist was killed in a car wreck. The boy went into a deep depression. So how does it go? Just a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. I'm afraid it will take a lot more for all those children for whom, because of the capacity of the human heart for mistakes and ignorance and cruelty, life has not been fair. Once we know that, there is something we can do. We can give more than our share of love to those who have never had enough. We can take a moment to touch a boy like the one I met that day and speak kindly to him so that if it's ever possible for him to complete the puzzle of light and dark in human behavior, he will have in his hands at least a few of the light and beautiful pieces, ones you gave him. If we do that in the name of the kingdom and for the love of Christ, then what we profess when we come to this place is not a mockery.